Well, tonight we have our brother, Johnny, that'll bring us the message. He would be pleased to have your silent prayers for him and your careful attention as well. Well, Johnny.
Thank you, Marvin. I think I must be kind of caught in a trap of looking back, and I'll try to excuse it as being a weakness of the years that sometimes incline us to to look back at things that happened quite a long time ago. We had a maintenance foreman that I worked with as a mechanic, and then when he was foreman, I worked under him for a few years, and he died rather suddenly. And at the funeral, the minister stood up and made a few personal comments, and then he began his discourse in the scripture, and he read in Acts chapter 17, and it's been one that I've not forgotten, and you'll see in just a little bit why. 17th chapter of Acts, verse 22. Then Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill and said, "Ye men of Athens," now I'm quoting what this man read to you, to us. He said, "Ye men of Athens, I see that in all things you're not quite clear." I did as you would have done, I'm certain. I sat up straight and I wondered silently, where did he get that Bible? Well, I never did find out for sure, but in the 50-some years since then, we have found that Bibles of that sort are overwhelmingly in the majority. Bibles changed for the convenience of men, and as I have thought it over from time to time, seeing that very, very few of the churches nowadays use the King James Version of the Bible, and it seems to me that that quote is more and more correct if he had begun, "Ye men of America, ye are not quite clear." Because obviously English was too difficult for the scholars who put together his Bible. And they couldn't understand what is written. And so they had to put in it what they thought they did understand. And they say now, as they have for a long time, because this started before I was born, they would read a passage in the scripture and say, "That really can't be. It's just a shortcut, and we'll have to figure out what it intended." Not very many years ago, perhaps 10, I encountered a series of books on the various books in the New Testament. And all of them would have consisted probably of around 100 pages apiece. Each one on one book in the New Testament, exploring deeply what the writer really meant instead of what he said. I assure you that I read very little before I became so disgusted that I didn't want to read anymore. It's a great sorrow to me that the world that calls itself Christian can't understand the language that is in the Bible. I for the benefit of the youngsters who haven't become as familiar as most of us, I'm going to read the rest of this passage that he was reading from in Acts. I'll begin again at the first of verse 22. Then Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill and said, "You men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are too superstitious. For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' Whom therefore ye ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation." Did you know that God knew where you were going to live before you were born? A long time before you were born? Paul says he did. I believe him. I broke off the middle of a sentence and I've got to start over again on it. "And hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring." So he went on to say, unconsciously, some of your poets have seen through the fog and know that we are the offspring of this God whom Paul was about to introduce them to and explain about him and give them an opportunity for a real acquaintance with God. And as he said there, that God had made us of one blood, that he had made everything on the earth and the earth. I'm going to go back now to the beginning of the Bible, and I'm not going to quote any of these makeshift Bibles, because I haven't read what they say, but I know what the people believe. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." And every one of us, by the time we were 2 or 3 years old, understood what that said. And we believed it. And now people say that that's a shortcut. That it can't be that it's that simple. And so they have to say within themselves, well, it has to be that originally most of the earth was covered with warm water, as he said that it was covered mostly, completely with water. But they concede enough to say it was probably covered mostly with warm water. How it got warm, I don't know. But it was sort of a primordial soup. And that somewhere along the billions of years as they went by, two molecules of amino acids, amino acids, I think, got stuck together in the goop and in the slime, and they decided to form a corporation, and everything that is life had its beginnings then and there. And after several more billions of years and accidental transmutations, things too strange for them to say just how they happen, but they try. But the offspring of some of those molecules, they say, stood up and offered himself as a candidate for president of the United States. Maybe that's being unkind. Maybe it's getting clear ahead of myself. And maybe I should take a slightly different tack and let a number of years go by, several thousands of years go by, and look again into the time that we have just celebrated, though we are fairly certain that Jesus was not born in the middle of a cold winter, that the reason those shepherds were out in the fields with their flocks was because the grass was new and lush, and so they were feeding out in the desert, and they had to stay out there with them to protect them both from the wild animals and more even from the thieves. So I want to read again in chapter 2 of the book of Luke. And it came to pass, this is verse 1, it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, unto Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. Uh-oh. They hit a blank spot again. Oh, they couldn't swallow that. These people listened to the most successful trick Satan has ever devised. And that's to tap somebody lightly on the shoulder and say, did you know that you're smarter than all the rest of these people? And if they believe him, he's got them. So, well, we got to work on that word espoused, because they couldn't understand it. It didn't mean married. So they came up with something else. I was not really watching the TV a few days ago, but I was listening to the narrator of the program, and he said that Joseph went with his fiancée to Bethlehem, and while she was there, the time came that she should be delivered of her child. Couldn't have him be a legitimate child. Didn't want him to be of any higher caste than they. It's heartrending to think about this, but while I was thinking this over, it kind of came to me in some of the vernacular that I've listened to in the last 20 years. And imagine what they might have said if these very same Bible scholars were today writing the Bible. And they would probably, I think, say, well, this dude named Joe had a girlfriend named Mary, and they went up to Bethlehem because that's where it was at. That's where the action was. And when they got there, things were really jumping. And you couldn't find a hotel room anywhere in town. But that baby was going to be born. So they had to take whatever they could find. If it was shelter, if they had to throw the sleeping bags out in the open like they did a few years ago up in New York at Woodstock. But anyway, he got acquainted with some sheep herders there that night after the baby was born and was telling them about the events. And he said, you know, the place was really no better than a barn. But perhaps I'm not being kind enough to them. The Lord has demanded that we refuse to call someone a fool. Perhaps we can let it kind of fall on somebody that we don't know. Because there's something that's really catching there that won't slip through, and I'm trying to illustrate how quickly and how far men go astray when they find out that they're too smart to believe those old myths and legends. But when we go back to the writings of Paul in the first chapter of Romans, I think that he explains this to us, just how it came that people began to disbelieve what we hold dear and to tie some other meaning to it, some lesser meaning to it, and thereby satisfy their need. And that's what they're doing. They're satisfying the conscience that tells them they ought to go to church, but they don't want to be obedient and they don't want to be believing. So they're all they are trying to do is salve their conscience somewhat. And so I want to read in chapter 1 of Romans at verse 14. And we read a little ways here. Paul says this, I am debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and the unwise. So as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to every one that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. And we've nailed the lack. The lack is faith. Those who wanted to say something that's of the type of thing that they would say themselves lack the faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. And we come to a really pitiful spot there, because when men started reworking their Bible, they said to make it plainer, they had the truth and they held it in unrighteousness. And he's going to explain that deeper for us. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. It's a prophecy. Paul had been shown exactly what was going to happen within what now is the last four generations, five. The revisions of the Bible began at about the early part of the 20th century, but the one that was most used first, the Revised Standard, I think, was first printed in 1946. I have that written someplace that I've mislaid it because I had the dates of several of these corrupt versions. Their foolish heart was darkened, and professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and that's what made it so easy for them to say that this plain English, which is in a few words, that quote that I read to you from Genesis was only one verse, and they had to have something that rambled along and on because they could not understand what he said. When the Congress of the United States, this may be 20 years ago, may not be, they were debating whether or not to select an official language for the nation. I don't think it was 20 years ago. We had quite a bit of flap about that for some time. But in the course of their debates, there was a congressman from the Southeast that stood up among the Congress, and he declared, "If English is good enough for Jesus Christ, it's good enough for me." I love that man. We know when we stop and think that Jesus spoke the dialect of the Hebrews in the area of Jerusalem. And yet, English was not foreign to him. So that if we read the statement in the beginning of some of our Bibles that was directed to King James by the scholars whom he appointed to translate the Bible from Hebrew and Greek into English, they made it very clear that they sought very earnestly the help of God and that He did help. And they glorified God for that help. And I testify that I have seen from time to time that God so helped them that His power is expressed to us in the language of the Bible to the degree that it can leave us weak and watery-eyed. It's there. It's expressed in this Bible. And the others don't even claim assistance of God. And it's true and clear that they didn't get it. Well, if we go back here and read again, professing themselves, this is verse 22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of an incorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. It's not too hard for us to take the words of Paul and realize that men have done just that. Gave up serving the God whom they didn't know because they had no eye nor thought for spiritual things. And consequently wanted to make man or birds or animals, or even insects, equal to our God. I was greatly distressed when I heard that City Council of San Francisco 5 or 6 years ago decreed that a person could not own an animal. He could become a caretaker. He could feed and clothe if it needed clothing. He could shelter it and keep it, but he couldn't own it because it was his equal. Sometimes we almost think they're right. Maybe they are equals. Maybe they've descended so far. But no, they haven't. They're still men. They still have souls. The creatures don't have souls. It's made plain to us in the Bible that we don't have to say, well, it's in the Book of Mormon, but it's plainer there than in the Bible, because it's nowhere in print any clearer than it is in the Bible. And when man gets this far afield, it's just a source of great distress to us that their foolish hearts could be darkened so very much. And I had thought that this was as much as I would read of this, but when I read it through again, I decided, no, in verse 24 and 5, Paul opened the floodgates of what has inundated this generation, has drowned and bewildered and injured, and has got the bulk of people so blinded that they, as the cowboy said, couldn't find their nose with both hands. So I'm obliged to read some more of it, because it describes this very generation, the worst of this generation, who changed the truth of God, this verse 25, into a lie, and worshiped the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up to vile affections. For even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise all the men, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet. A number of years ago, Enid and I were visiting in the home of her brother Horace and his wife. Horace must have died in about 1993 or 4. So, you know, it's been a good long time ago. But when AIDS had just begun to be a countrywide invasion, when it swept over and left us without a way to express what we were seeing. We were involved in conversation about that very circumstance one day during that visit, and Horace asked me. Those of you who knew Horace knew that he was a reverent man, but he didn't go to church. I don't know if he ever belonged to a church. But when he was in conversation with one who had become a sort of a blazing a fundamentalist, who told him he was going to hell, he said, "I don't really think so." But Horace asked me, Do you believe that this AIDS epidemic is a judgment of God against these people? And I thought it indicated a good depth of understanding. And I said, you bet I do. Because I've lived already long enough to have seen many, many years when it was a shameful thing and it was hidden. But as soon as people began to say it's normal, they just marched to a different drum. It fell upon them. It became an epidemic and it swept the world. It was already known and well known in Africa because the people there lived even looser than the people here did. But if we read on, we find out just the reason, more of the reason why it was so. His language was that the recompense of their error was meet, was appropriate, was right for them. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. We know that in the English of the 17th century, convenient meant appropriate. And they didn't like to retain God in their knowledge because they had already had God in their knowledge and they didn't like it. It's hard to imagine people who weigh right and wrong and choose wrong because they like it, because they know what it is and still choose it because they like it. It hasn't been a great many years ago that I first met someone like that, and it's a hard one to absorb. They didn't like to retain God in their knowledge. I read on from the middle of 28. God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers. He just about covered the scope of sins, didn't he? Well, we'll get a couple more here and then he'll leave it. Without natural affection, implacable, that's beyond being reasoned with, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, and this is the stickler, this is the one that you know when you read it is the truth, and it bites, it hurts to say, I have to say this of people, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Remember Sodom and Gomorrah. You recall that two angels came to Lot one evening, and he met them at the gates of the city of Sodom and entreated them to come to his house. He didn't know they were angels at first, but he asked them to come to his house because he knew the men of Sodom and knew how badly they treated strangers. So he said, you better come to my house with me. And so they did. Of course, they knew they were going to come to Lot's house because they were sent from God. And they had come to tell Lot, get out of here because God is going to destroy the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and all the little cities of the plain and the countryside. He's going to rain fire on it. And it's time now. You have to get away. But we have to read what the men of Sodom said to Lot that night. Chapter 19, of Genesis, and we'll begin with verse 4. And this speaks first of Lot and his family and these two men, it calls them, when they first arrived. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot and said unto him, "Where are the men that came in to thee tonight? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them." And Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after him, and said, "I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold, now I have two daughters." Can you imagine this man feeling so much that he had to protect the guest in his house that he offered these vile people his daughters? He did. They didn't take him up on it. "Behold, now I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do ye to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore came they under the shadow of my roof." And they said, "Stand back." And they said again, "This one fellow came in to sojourn. This Lot came here to live temporarily." That's what sojourn is. If you read the Daily Sentinel, you didn't find that, because they don't know. "Came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them." And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. "We will deal worse with thee." How could they deal worse? How could they know worse if they didn't already know that what they were dealing in was evil? Worse is compared to bad. It's not compared to good. "We will deal worse with you." So they told him exactly what we've been trying to come to, that they knew exactly what they were doing, how evil it was, and chose it anyway. And were like to break the door. But the men put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. And yet they didn't learn anything. The whole crowd, they were struck blind by the angels of God. After they had made it clear that they knew what they were doing and how wrong it was, and still, they couldn't learn. Well, Jesus tells us that does happen. And in his ministry, he made it clear to us, 13th chapter of Matthew, we're going to begin to read in chapter 13 at verse 10. "And the disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest thou unto them in parables? He answered unto them and said unto them, Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken away even that he hath. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they, seeing not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand." I think I read that wrong. "Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they, seeing, see not, and hearing, They hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, by hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing ye shall see and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. It's a great pity that so many people have chosen that way. Isaiah saw it. Jesus explained it. And he said, I can't tell it to these people in terms that they understand, because they still won't know. Because their heart is wax gross. It's hard. It's not going to receive. And today, seeing they see not, hearing they hear not, and neither do they understand. What a great pity it is that so many, and it reminds me of the language, I think, of Mormon, when he looked upon his nation and he said, O ye fair ones, you handsome, healthy people who have been upright, how could you have done these things to yourselves? When he saw the sins they committed against each other and against themselves. And then he came to the point that he said, I can't do anything for you. I can't reach out to you because you won't hear. So many people, so many nations are not quite clear.